PR News, it's 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Our guest today is the longest-serving commissioner in New Hampshire government, Van McLeod, head of the Department of Cultural Resources. First appointed by Governor Judd Gregg in the early 90s, McLeod has seen many a budget battle over the years, and with those, more than one effort to abolish his department. The latest bill to do so came up earlier this year, but was voted inexpedient to legislate. In other words, it was killed. The department itself has a pretty wide portfolio. In addition to the State Council on the Arts, it oversees historical resources, state libraries, and the Film and Television Office. And McLeod says those agencies add up to a huge economic engine. According to the department's research, 60% of visitors to the state say the primary reason they come is to attend a cultural event. And once they're here, of course, they spend money on going out to eat, on lodging, on shopping. In fact, while your average Granite Stater will spend about $20 overall in connection with a cultural happening, out-of-staters will spend almost twice that much, $35. Today in The Exchange, we check in with Van McLeod, Commissioner of the New Hampshire Department of Cultural Resources. And let's hear from you, too. What are your thoughts on how well the state promotes its arts and culture? How could it do better? And what questions do you have about McLeod's department's role in our state's economy? Give us a call, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email, exchange@nhpr.org is the address, or post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. And Commissioner McLeod, it's nice to see you. Welcome back. It's been a while.
My pleasure.
Well, I think the last time we talked actually was in the depths of the recession in 2009. And we were talking then about mere survival, really, in terms of arts and cultural organizations. What are you noticing now, Commissioner McLeod, about the state's cultural sector as the economy improves, but improves at a modest pace?
Well, it's interesting. I think that, well, first of all, I'm an eternal optimist. So even in the depths of the recession, I think there were things that we learned. I think there were things that occurred. I think New Hampshire's cultural community has actually been very resilient, even in bad times and good times. So when bad times came, it's not that people weren't used to it. You know, on the state level, we lost a bunch of people in the department, but out in the communities, which is where we focus, I think interesting things occurred. And I think the biggest thing that occurred is that people are really beginning to realize more than ever that what it's about is partnerships and collaborations. And that's what really makes things work. And a true partnership is when you understand somebody else's enlightened self-interest. So it's not just a one-shot deal, but you actually create something. And whether it, most of the organizations we work with are not-for-profits. So it's about building community. So those are good things, I think.
So how would you say sort of the world of arts and culture has changed since the last time we talked? Again, 5 years ago, you're mentioning one aspect of this, partnerships. It's not just, you know, I'm going it alone here and you're going it alone there. We're collaborating and making it better for both of us. Give us an example of that.
Well, let me go back a little bit with this, too, because for the longest time, we in the cultural community dealt with anecdotes. We were really good about telling the stories of who we were, what we're about, and how, you know, Mrs. Smith and her six children came to see the show or went to the exhibit and what kind of reaction they had, and wasn't that great. Well, we actually had an economic survey done over the last couple of years. And thanks to the Putnam Foundation, we did that with private funds. And it really gave us some hardcore facts and figures, which going along with anecdotes helps tell the story. But in the process of that, essentially what is occurring is people are realizing again that the partnerships and the collaboration component is absolutely key. So you find, for example, the New Hampshire Professional Theater Association working with each other doing an audition. There's over 1,000 jobs in New Hampshire summer theater. So doing an audition here, and how do we hire New Hampshire kids? How do we give them a good shot at on stage, behind the scenes, and also at the administrative component, whether it's marketing, box office, administrative stuff? why not give New Hampshire kids a shot at it?
Well, and there are other sort of business and nonprofit partnerships. I mean, just Concord, which I'm most familiar with because I live here, over the weekend, Red River Theaters, a nonprofit theater, showed Grease, the 1950s cult classic, and Arnie's, which is sort of a 1950s hot dog and ice cream place, came down and collaborated with them. So that's sort of a private nonprofit example of that collaboration.
Well, and you take a look at what Alex Ray and the Common Man folks have done throughout the state. You know, they did great work in Portsmouth this past year. They worked with Prescott Park, and it wasn't just, you know, they became a sponsor, but more than that, they actually, Alex Ray, who's a wonderful guy, went and actually ran some of their stands to, you know, how do you turn over product better for your customers that are there? And it really made a bottom line difference to both organizations. And that kind of partnership makes a difference.
Here's a question, though, for you. And you talked about economic development, and I can see that report in front of you, Commissioner McLeod, arts and economic prosperity. And we'll definitely talk about, you know, again, the spinoffs and the partnerships and all that. And everybody's looking at numbers and how can these arts and cultural institutions help boost our local economies. What about arts for art's sake, though, Commissioner McLeod? You know, to some extent, are we so focused on let me prove my economic worth that we kind of set aside culture for culture's sake, art for art's sake, beauty for beauty's sake?
You know, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think the difficulty today is that you've got to have a foot in both camps.
Show me the data.
Yeah.
Show me the numbers.
I think, unless you are showing the data and the data there, if you will, in the local community, to your elected officials in your town, to the businesses in your town, I think you're not really at the table. What I try to suggest to people who are on not-for-profit organizations, are you just going to the Rotary to speak once a year, or are you going and are you joining? Are you at the table? Are you in the conversation? I personally believe that if you do that, that actually helps you, gives you some time and resources for the art for art's sake component, because without that, it doesn't work. And New Hampshire, our heritage, our tradition, is really based on creativity. And the McDowell Colony, the Cornish Art Colony, the Dublin Art Colony, the White Mountain School of Art. I mean, the list goes on and on. When I was at high school years and years ago, I was in a friend's barn in Hopkinton.
You grew up in Concord, by
yeah,
the way.
I did. And we were swinging on the rafters and swinging in ropes and going into hay. And it was warm. It was late June. And all of a sudden, he stopped, and he opened up the side of the barn. And I said, what's this? And he said, oh, a dance company used to come up here and stay in the house, and they rehearsed. They came up from New York, and they spent the summer here rehearsing and working on things. And at the end of the summer, they would put on a performance for the community.
Oh, wow.
So what they did was they created the barn as a stage. People came, put their chairs out in the field, sat in the field, and watched the performance. New Hampshire's always been a place where people can come and create.
I want to ask you about people coming, because that's one of the big numbers that jumped out at me from this report. But let me also invite our listeners to join us, Commissioner McLeod. The number is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Van McLeod is with us today. He's Commissioner of New Hampshire's Department of Cultural Resources. Prior to this, McLeod had many years' experience producing and directing theater and film. He was first appointed in 1992, so now he's New Hampshire's longest-serving commissioner. What are your thoughts on how well the state does promoting its arts and culture? How could it do better, in your opinion? Also, your thoughts about what this department's role is in our state and in our communities. As Commissioner McLeod says, that's where he really hopes to work. 1-800-892-6477 is the number for you to join us. 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. Again, 1-800-892-6477. So lots of numbers in that 2012 report, Commissioner McLeod, about the economic importance, as we said, arts and culture and their role in boosting local and statewide economic development. Here's one number that jumped out for me, though, that I'd love to ask you about. More than 60% of non-residents responded that the primary reason they came to this state was to attend a specific cultural event. I was surprised by that. I thought they came for the mountains, lakes, coast, rugged North Country.
Well, I was a little surprised.
I think culture, I think Boston,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I was a little surprised myself on one level. But on another, you know, first of all, the survey that was done, it was there were no multipliers in it at all. 21% of the people that were asked to participate in it did, and only that information was used in this survey. So the audience's response, these were questions that were asked of the audience at cultural events. And you can go to places like, you know, the League of New Hampshire Craftsmen's Fair, and that was one of the places that was in it. And, of course, the reason that people came was to go to the Craftsmen's
Fair.
Sure,
that's a big event.
The bottom line is the number one thing anybody does when they come to New Hampshire is shop. You know, we live in an environment that is totally inclusive. So, yes, people come for the White Mountains, for the lakes, for the Monadnock region, for the Seacoast area. But what is it they do when they're here? And I think that's the trick. And I think the trick for the cultural organizations is how do you partner with those other folks? For example, the traditional visitor industry, which is why we work a lot with our travel and tourism office and cultural heritage tourism roundtables we do all the time.
You've got one coming up, I think, October 22nd.
Exactly, yeah. Up in the Lincoln area. And that's an interesting partnership because it's the Woodstock Inn in the North Country Center for the Arts. It's going to occur in the Woodstock Inn in a great new place that Scott Rice has done there. But it's you got to partner. You got to work with those folks in the visitor industry. You can't just assume that people are going to go to your gallery or go to your event. But we're seeing more and more activities that are occurring, whether it's outdoor festivals, and we're in the middle of a film festival component that's going to happen both here in Concord and in the Seacoast this month. It's just amazing. These kinds of things that attract people, get people out in the street. And I would also suggest, I mean, the agricultural fairs throughout New Hampshire are also, in a broad sense, a part of our cultural component. People come. Our heritage, our traditions, those are an important part of who we are. This weekend, Warner Fall Foliage Festival. It's a fantastic thing to go to. Watch what goes on there.
Well, and we'll hope for good weather for that.
Absolutely.
And you can join us with your calls at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. We'll be right back.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. And we only have until October 15th to wrap up the NHPR Sustaining Member Challenge. When 500 listeners become sustainers by the 15th, NHPR will be receiving $10,000 from the Mackinich Foundation and be canceling a day from our upcoming fall fund drive. But we need you to help to sustain your news service at nhpr.org. Cloudy today, occasional showers, chance of thunderstorms. Some of them may produce some gusty winds and heavy rainfall. Highs today, upper 60s to mid-70s. Support for NHPR comes from UR members, and support also comes to us from the Clean Bedroom Organic Mattress and Bedding Showroom in Kittery, Maine. Everything made from organic and sustainable materials, also on the web at thecleanbedroom.com. And the Spine Center at Dartmouth-Hitchcock Medical Center, using research results to build customized treatment plans. Information at dhspine.org. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, New Hampshire's Commissioner of Cultural Resources, Van McLeod, is with us about his department's role in the state, especially as we're hearing in economic development. You can join us, 1-800-892-6477. If you're involved in the arts and culture community, we'd love to hear from you how well you think the state promotes its arts and culture, and just more broadly, what questions do you have about Van McLeod's department and its role in our state? 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, post a comment on the Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. And Commissioner McLeod, let's go to our callers now. And Morgan's calling in from New Hampton. Hi, Morgan, you're on the air. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you very much.
Go ahead, Morgan.
Yes, I really feel that the arts are very important for the development of our children. And I think it's perhaps one of the most important reasons to make sure that they're available. I'd love to hear the commissioner, and thank you for this wonderful conversation. I'd love to hear his thoughts on helping children improve their lives.
Arts and education, it's a big topic, and I wanted to ask you about that anyway, Commissioner McLeod. So thank you very much, Morgan. Go ahead.
Well, it's interesting. I sense in Morgan's voice that he is a father. I am a father. I think, all realize, especially when you have children, that the future is about our kids and our ability to give information and get our kids involved in different activities that help them grow as human beings. We don't necessarily need more artists out there. We need people who are dedicated, who are disciplined, and that's what the arts bring, and that's what sort of cultural aspects bring. In regards to the STEM to STEAM component that's going on.
Okay, and let's back up. STEM is science, technology, engineering, and math. Big push everywhere from kindergarten to graduate school to focus more on science, technology, engineering, and math, and lots of concern from state officials, people in the business community, that we don't do enough for so-called STEM. So go ahead.
I would suggest that you need to add an A to that. And in a way, the A certainly is arts, but what the A stands for is creativity. And people in the technology area, the engineers, the mathematicians, they totally all understand that. Unless there is a creative component to that, you don't really succeed. So in a way, I wish it was another word than A, it was the C. But when you say STEAM, you've got to think of it being creativity. And the arts brings that in an educational component.
Do you feel like people are hearing that message, or do you think they're kind of going, yeah, that sounds good, but we're competing with South Korea here?
I say, let's compete with South Korea. And if we add creativity to that, then we will blow anybody out of the water. I'm hearing people, once they understand it from that point of view, they totally agree. The engineers do, mathematicians do, scientists do, technology people do. That is what has moved them forward. The numbers of people that come forward who are in the STEM component that say, boy, if I hadn't taken that music class, I really wouldn't have been able to think this way.
And there's a famous story about Steve Jobs taking a calligraphy class. I'm sure you've heard that story. But here's my question, though, Commissioner McLeod. I mean, so you're saying that, and people may be thinking, yeah, that sounds nice. But the money, the scholarships, the grants, efforts in Congress, they're all focused on STEAM. The money isn't going to STEM.
I would agree. I wish it was a little bit different, because I think a little bit focused at that. I should say that here in our state, our conversation with the Department of Education has been very positive in regards to this. They get this completely. We have an Arts and Education Conference coming up on the 25th up in Freedom, New Hampshire. That's going to be a major part of this. It's, you know, we in the cultural community realize it's always a battle. You know, you're never going to solve the problem. You just got to keep working on it. I think if you work on it for the right reasons, if you work on it for kids, if you work on it for your community, if you work on it for the betterment of society, and if you keep that in your head, that keeps you going. That keeps me going.
Well, one more question about this, and then I have a lot of other stuff I want to ask you. And Morgan, thanks a lot for the call. You mentioned earlier, Commissioner McLeod, that arts organizations need to be, quote, at the table in their communities. You know, you need to be members of the Rotary Club. You need to be at the local Chamber of Commerce. You need to be engaged and out there. In these statewide initiatives that are promoting STEM, whether it's, again, business groups or the Higher Education Council, are you at the table with this arts message?
I often am. I'm very fortunate. I was earlier on this summer, the Planning Association down in the Monadnock region invited me as their guest speaker. I've done the same thing in different parts of the community. I believe my job is not to sit in my office, even though, unfortunately, I do way too much. My job is to be out in community, talking to community leaders, trying to connect the dots. I'm really an old theater and film producer who got sort of conned into working for the government. But and then I woke up one morning going, well, if you're a producer, produce. And what producers do is connect dots, bring different components together. I mean, that's what your producer does on this show. And those are the things that make community work.
That's a really good way to put your job. You're producing, in a way, on this large, grand scale.
I see that happened to me about 6 months into this. I said, you don't want to be a bureaucrat. Why are you doing this? And I looked in the mirror and said, you're a producer. Produce. And that's what's gotten me through this.
21 years.
Yeah, wow.
Morgan, thanks a lot for that call. We'd love your questions and comments. For Commissioner Van McLeod, again, head of New Hampshire's Department of Cultural Resources, 1-800-892-6477. If you're involved in the arts and culture community, or if you're just someone like Morgan who really cares about this, we'd love to hear from you. Efforts at the statewide level to promote and support arts and culture, how they could be made better, 1-800-892-6477 is our number. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. One more time, that number, 1-800-892-6477. And just picking on what you said, Commissioner McLeod, you said I'm a film and TV guy, film producer. Your department includes the Film and TV Office, and there was an effort earlier this year to extend the business profits tax to movie, TV, and other producers. What was the argument there?
Well, throughout the country, there are a variety of states that have jumped on this tax incentive component for film and television.
Most states have this, from what
they
I understand.
Do. Yeah. There are negatives. There are positives that go with that. I think it's important to go through a process. Whatever the bottom line is and what it turns out to being, I think it's important that it be a New Hampshire solution. We are different. We do not have an income tax, which is what a lot of these are based on. So Matthew Newton, who runs the Film and Television Office, he's been doing a fantastic job over there. And there's a lot of product that is coming into the state. And I think we need to focus on what are the film incentives to be here, not just tax credits. What are the things that New Hampshire has that actually brings people here? To compete with the big Hollywood films, you obviously need other things. And quite honestly, I think the smaller independent films are our niche, not the big Hollywood blockbusters.
So given limited time and resources, what are we going to focus on?
Yeah, and I think that's who comes here. And we also do commercials. We do still shoots. There was a fantastic woman from the Seacoast region, Leslie Smith, who's a puppeteer, just took over the television station in Durham, and basically had puppeteers come up from Sesame Street, spent a week here shooting a pilot that, with any luck, it will occur here because of and the people who I saw and met there, they said, wow, New Hampshire is incredible.
So getting back to this, extending the business profits tax to movie, TV, other producers, what happened?
Well, it's basically been held to be in study. In a lot of ways, that sort of kills the bill on one level. But at the other, people get to look at it again. And I think it's worth looking at. And it's worth discussing.
Should we tax these producers when they come in?
Well, it's not. It's giving them a tax break.
A break, right.
And how you do it, what story you tell to the film industry will encourage them to come. So that's why I'm looking at incentives, not just tax breaks.
Because typically New Hampshire doesn't do this. I mean, I've talked to the Commissioner of Economic Development multiple times about this. You know, Tennessee offers 2 years income tax free, or, you know, if you'll build your plant here, and other states do this. And our line has always been, no, we don't do this because we have such a favorable tax environment to begin
with.
Yeah,
we won't give somebody 2 years income tax free. We'll give them a lifetime income tax free.
I knew you were going to say that.
You know, I mean, I think you need to find out what that advantage is and how you work with it. And I'll bring back a comment that John Sununu Sr. gave a long time ago when asked on stage, you guys were doing this, I think, with the six living New Hampshire governors. And he said, New Hampshire's advantage is not our taxes. It's our quality of life. Otherwise, why would somebody live in Massachusetts – live in New Hampshire and work in Massachusetts.
Let's take some calls. We've got a lot of people who want to talk to Commissioner McLeod. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. You can email us as well, exchange at nhpr.org, or post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. And Kathy's waiting in Lebanon. Hi, Kathy. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I was just commenting on the earlier caller on children, and my thought is the root of a lot of things in the educational system is the division between the higher education and the art system, and how the collaboration between the two, getting the artists and the critical thinkers together to work together within the school system and bringing those groups together to solve problems and work on their educational through that.
Kathy, I'm not really sure where you're going with this. You're saying higher education needs to work with K through 12. Is that what you're saying? Or
I'm just saying in the school system, there seems to be a division with, let's say, the high achievers in academics, and then there is a division with the art students. But pulling them together for critical thinking and creative problem solving and working with the two, there's almost a division between the artists and the high-achieving students.
I see. Okay. Thank you very much, Kathy. And go ahead. We talked earlier about arts and education, Commissioner McLeod.
Well, I would suggest that she jump into her local community, that all should do that. It's interesting to me. I think what I see a lot is the kids that are involved in the arts in high school and in elementary school actually do become some of the higher achievers in our communities. I think we separate, different units in school more than we used to. Instead of dealing with the whole child, we deal with different pieces. That's a show in itself, Laura.
Silos that we're into.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Kathy, thanks for the question. And I had another question actually about children and the arts. I have noticed that it seems like boys are less comfortable doing artistic ventures in school. The plays, the music, the chorus, even the visual arts. It seems like the girls more gravitate. The boys think it's not boyish and cool. And so they, as they get older, they seem to move away from that.
I guess I was sort of the opposite of that. I sort of gravitated to it as I got older. There's so many things that occur with kids, I think, and it has to do with, individual teachers that turn somebody on to something. What I really loved when I was teaching, I taught up at the New Hampton School for a while, and one of the kids who was the star of the hockey team, and it was a big-time hockey team at that time, came to me and wanted to do the costumes in the play we were doing. So encouraging that, I think it's important for the arts folks to be involved in the athletic folks, because they're all the same on one level. It's about building the character of that individual child.
So instead of just saying, well, boys don't seem as interested these days, looking at how you can reach out to them on their level, so to speak.
Well,
if they're not like you when you were growing up.
And I hate to say this, but just as a male, that I think, young girls mature a lot quicker than young men do. And it's a little bit more difficult.
Let's take some more calls. Lots of people who want to jump in our conversation. Commissioner McLeod, our number 1-800-892-6477. Bill's calling from Gorham. Hi, Bill. Thanks for joining us. You're on the air.
Oh, good morning. Good morning. Great show. Thank you for taking my call. Just a couple brief messages. It seems like what the commissioner within his department does is a lot of private business or private entity and government partnerships to expand the arts. In other words, partnering with either theater groups or whatever to improve what they have to offer as well as improve what we have to offer as a state. And secondly, on the tax credit, I think it's important to understand that the industry asking for that interjected language that makes them transferable. And simply what that means is that they can take that tax credit and it goes against whatever they produce, but they can sell it to another entity who in turn can cash it in with the state. And a long story short, what that means is it makes the state an investor in that film, because it's important to understand that a tax credit is a state writing out a check to whomever has that credit. So that's the other part of that I think needs to be looked at very closely.
Yeah, when you give, you need to weigh these.
Entity.
Yeah, and are you saying, Bill, we need to weigh these carefully, who we give out tax credits to?
Right, and it's important to understand that the state, with its limited resources, can be required to write a check to a company that has absolutely nothing to do with the film industry or anything else within the state, a check.
Okay, Bill, thanks a lot for calling in. Yeah, go ahead, Commissioner McLeod.
Well, I think he's got some great points, which is why this dialogue needs to continue. We do know that the film industry, when they come in, are much – and it's a manufacturing industry. That's how it's designated. It actually drops a lot of money. When the Brotherhood of Poland was shot in Plymouth, New Hampshire, in a three-week period of time, it dropped $600,000 in the Plymouth economy. So it's not just the filmmakers, it's the restaurants, the hotels. Actually, we got a very interesting call from a man who owned a cleaning company. And down in Milford, a feature was being shot, a local feature was being shot, and he was called to come and clean an old car dealership up. And he called us and said, I didn't know I was involved in the film industry. So it is about economic development. It is about jobs. It is about dropping money into our community. But if we don't do it right, it won't work.
Yeah, and if you give one person a tax credit or one industry a tax credit, then other industries are saying, hey, 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 wait about us.
You're absolutely correct. So you got to be very careful about this.
You know, this gets into some of the financial battles that your department's been involved in over the years, Commissioner McLeod, and there have been more than one attempt to get rid of your department. People have said, hey, what do we need this for? Let's put historical resources under maybe the Secretary of State's office, and let's put the Arts Council maybe under Resources and Economic Development. Make the case that we need a whole department to do this instead of putting agencies under existing other departments.
Well, this department was created by John Sununu when he was governor because he thought that the cultural component should all come together. It started off as the Department of Library Arts and Historical Resources, went to Cultural Affairs, and then I changed it to Cultural Resources because, in fact, collectively, we are resources for the community. Our libraries are in every community, historical resources in every community. We have economic impact in both our libraries, our historical resources, our arts, and our film office. And it's about working together. I think we're a small state. Let's get out of the silos. Let's work together. Let's find ways that we can build community, make New Hampshire even a better place to live, raise our children, grow businesses. That's what it's about.
When you've been called up before the legislature to kind of justify your department's existence and its budget, what have you said?
Well, I've gone through it sort of line by line. Often they ask questions. I try to take a look at how it affects the communities that not only that the individual legislators are from, but everybody's from. And quite honestly, the last time I said very little, citizens said a lot. And I think my job is as a commissioner is to report. I'm not a policy person. The legislature creates the policy. I follow it out. The legislators are elected by citizens. The citizens needed to have the voice.
We will take a lot more of your calls and emails and comments on Facebook after a super short break. The number 1-800-892-6477. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, or send a short email to exchange@nhpr.org. We'll be right back.
This is NHPR. It's 9:39. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, a preview of the U.S. Supreme Court's fall term. Then, former longtime PBS News anchor Jim Lehrer on his 21st novel. All coming up on The Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. New Hampshire weather for today, cloudy, some occasional showers, and a chance of thunderstorms. Some of them may produce some gusty winds and heavy rainfall. Highs today, upper 60s to the mid-70s. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Sugar Hill Sampler in Sugar Hill, a shop featuring quilts, home decor, gourmet food and candy, and a museum spanning two centuries of local facts, photos, and folklore. SugarHillSampler.com. And Vineyard Brands importers of La VFM wines from Fami Perrin of the Southern Rhone Valley, available at New Hampshire State liquor stores, LaVFM.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, the union leader has been a New Hampshire staple for 150 years. We'll look back at its legacy. Email us your comments and questions before the show at exchange@nhpr.org and join us tomorrow morning, live at 9. Today in The Exchange, we're talking with New Hampshire's Commissioner of Cultural Resources, Van McLeod, the state's longest-serving commissioner, appointed by Judge Gregg in 1992. We invite you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org, 1-800-892-6477, or post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. And Commissioner McLeod, let's go right back to our callers, and let's go next to Don in Andover. Hi, Don. Go ahead. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Thank you, Laura. I'm interested in dollars and cents about the budget the commissioner has and how it has waxed and waned through different political parties and administrations. Thank you.
Don, thank you for calling, and go ahead, Commissioner McLeod.
Well, that's an interesting question. We certainly have waxed and waned. Our funds are directly related to federal funds as well. Both Arts Historical Resources and the State Library all get federal funds, which either need to be matched or matched in kind as well. So it's always a game of trying to match those federal funds. We have done actually, it's interesting. People don't really understand this or think this, but actually, historically, we've done better both on a national level and on a local level under Republican governors than we have other Democratic governors. Administrations. I think
meaning our, in terms of your budget.
In terms of the budget. I think our current governor gets it completely. I've had great conversations with her. She's trying to connect those dots the same way, bringing the commissioners together, have us work together, and is a person who understands the need for that match. So after the last recession where we got really whacked, as other people did as well, we find ourselves slowly but surely sort of pulling ourselves out of the hole. But again, we got to stay focused on community, on doing things out there in the community to create value in what we do. And again, our job as government is very different from the individual. So our job is to support those libraries, those historical folks out there, the arts organizations, the filmmakers that are out there. We are public servants in support of them.
When you went through that budget crisis, as all state agencies did, and our call is right, you know, things have waxed and waned over the years. When you made that, when you went through that time, were you confronted with questions, Commissioner McLeod? Look, times are tough. I have to choose between funding an arts organization or funding foster care or funding food stamps. I mean, there was some real dire need. And I wonder how you felt about sort of on the one hand, on the other hand.
Well, again, I'm an old theater producer. I have been with the state for 21 years. In those 21 years, I've never really been asked about my budget. I've been asked about my expenses. A budget includes expenses and income. So the question needs to be, and what I try to talk to the legislature about, is what is the income that we generate for the state to help support those activities that a government should be doing for those who are not as well off, and whether it's homeless or whether it's children that are disabled or whatever it is, you take us out of the picture, the income, I believe, decreases, and I think part of the survey actually proves that.
Let's go back to our listeners, and Paul's been waiting in Brookline. Hi, Paul, you're on the exchange. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. Commissioner McLeod, first, thank you for everything you do, and I know you're probably aware of what we do down here in Brookline. We've got 140 acres public access sculpture park. The director of art, John Weidman, again extends an invitation for you to come down and see what we do. We believe it's the largest sculpture park in New England. And a couple things. First, you had made a mention about the problem with getting boys involved in art, and we found that a way to do it is to give boys a little bit of the technology aspects. We do things like iron pours. We melt iron, we let them make molds, and then they get to see it. And I'll tell you, when the sparks are flying, the kids love it.
So anything to do with fire,
way
right?
One easy to get boys involved is make something that throws out sparks and makes a lot of noise, you know?
Well, Paul, I'm glad you called, and I have to say, I was not aware that New Hampshire had a 140-acre sculpture park, so I'll have to check that out myself. Thanks for calling, Paul. What do you think?
Oh, it is fantastic down there. I mean, I have never visited. I get invitations all the time. I need to get down there. And, Paul, you're right. I do need to get there. And you hit the nail on the head. I think, you know, boys like their hands on something, and they like to move things around. And I think the kind of sculpture, putting things in the fire, getting metal worked, I think you're right on the money. And keep up the good work. It's fantastic what you do down there.
Well, it sounds like you are going to have to go now
Absolutely.
That he's invited you on the
Absolutely.
Air here. So thanks a lot for the call, Paul. You know, we were talking just a minute ago about the state funding. You were making the case, Commissioner McLeod, that, you know, you are helping leverage dollars into this state. What about the current partial federal government shutdown? Given how many of your programs are partially funded by the federal government, how's that affecting life of the department these days?
Well, we, like other state agencies, did our drawdown prior to it, so hopefully we'll be okay.
What does that mean?
That means the federal money that's been committed to you, you can draw down and bring into the state coffers. So we're good for a little while, but if this continues, we, like everybody else, will be in difficulty. There are people in our department that are 100% paid by the federal funds. Again, the drawdown has helped secure that for a while, but it is difficult.
What's a while? Like 2 weeks, a month?
That's the questions we're now dealing with. Hopefully it's longer than 2 weeks, but I don't have that answer right now.
And I think some people don't understand how much state agencies here in New Hampshire are funded in large measure by federal dollars, especially yours, environmental services, and so forth. There's a huge federal component in these state agencies.
For example, our book drivers who drive the books all around the state, those are federally funded. So we work with every library in the state and do a place where if you, in fact, are in Durham and you want a book that's in Colebrook, it can get brought to you through the system. That could stop at some point, but we're hoping that it doesn't because it's a huge asset to the individual libraries.
Let's talk a little bit more about the libraries because they are under your department as well. Again, something that many folks may not realize. So you guys are in charge of the state library, and then the state library helps manage all the local town libraries.
Well, we don't manage them. What we do is try to support them in any ways we can. And Laura, I got to say, I always love quizzes. So I have a quiz for you.
Oh, no.
Yeah. In what year was the state library founded?
Oh, I should know this because we did a whole show on libraries about 3-4 weeks ago. So I'm going to guess 1830-something?
1717.
Wow.
It was a colonial library before it was a state library. It was a part of our original government because the state library is different. We're not a local library. What we do is take care of the records and the information that the state has. And we work with archives, certainly, but that's where this stuff, we are a research library for that. And the library connects with those local communities. We create consortia around different activities and make things cheaper for them. One of the biggest things we're doing now is the whole white space thing with UNH. Because of all the technology on the bandwidth, there's a bunch of white space. So the ability to jump on in different communities to create more, not bandwidth, because the bandwidth has been out there, but it's a space where it can be public again, not just owned by private component. So if you're in Durham, for example, that's a place Durham Library is doing it, and we're working with libraries. Michael York's our state librarian. He's fantastic. And working with different libraries to make that available to different communities. Hopefully, especially up north, that will bring more capability through the internet.
Let's take some more calls if we could. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email us, exchange@nhpr.org, or post a comment on our Facebook page. And Commissioner McLeod, let's go next to Michael waiting in Bedford. Hi, Michael. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Good morning, Laura. Good morning, Commissioner. Has there been any consideration given to using the old Pease Air Force hangars as sound stages? About 90% of Avatar the movie was filmed in an old Howard Hughes hangar in Los Angeles.
Wow. Great question, Michael.
Actually, about 15 years ago, this whole topic came up in
when Pease was first going through the whole shutdown process.
And there was a gentleman who came to New Hampshire who was one of the largest costumers, and he had trucks and trucks of costumes. And that's how that operation works. Often there'll be trucks, and they'll move to different sets. And we looked at different hangars. A lot of the hangars are still in use. Part of the big issue there is sound. And quite honestly, what it needs is if somebody's going to do it, somebody other than the state needs to step forward and create that. There was an attempt up in the – and is an attempt up in the Laconia area to create a soundstage out of an old manufacturing plant, and it's the Granite Studios. It's having difficulties like we all are at this time. But there is a soundstage in New Hampshire that can be used. But again – when that is done, a company needs to be able to come in, create it, which occurred, but other companies then need to come in and shoot their film there to make it profitable.
So the sound problems would be just an old hangar by itself is not a great place for sound. It would have to be massively retrofitted.
You would have to take care of a lot of those sound components. You're absolutely correct to make it soundproof.
Still, those are big spaces. I do wonder, just jumping off of Michael's point, are they sitting empty? Because if they are, you can imagine some large cultural use for them.
Duncan McGowan, an old friend, said to me, every time you see a building, you think of it as a theater or a sound stage or something. But,
I'm asking the wrong person, yeah. In other words.
Yes, but there are all kinds of issues there. You know, it's the Air National Guard flies out of there. Other things fly in and out. It is an area where there is sound. So can you, how do you do it? It is in a great area for film. Quite honestly, the Seacoast is a fantastic area. It's within the magic circle of Boston where you can bring products in and productions in.
All right. Well, Michael, thank you for the question. I have a couple more questions for you, Commissioner, before we close out. We've talked about libraries, the State Arts Council, arts and education, film and TV. We haven't talked yet about another very important division in your department, and that's the Division of Historical Resources. What would you say nowadays, Commissioner McLeod, is the biggest challenge facing our historic buildings here in New Hampshire?
Well, one person's gem often is another person's disaster. I remember when I first got appointed, one of the counselors asked me, what do you think of old buildings?
And I said, executive counselors, yeah.
And I said, well, if you're talking about my garage, it's not worth much. But if you're talking about, something that is really important, then it is. The job of the Division of Historical Resources is a couple of things. One, they are the voice, if you will, for historical resources, both above ground and below ground. So archaeological aspects, we have all kinds of issues with – actually, we had an issue a little while ago where there was a bulldozer bulldozing up a grave. Those are the things we come involved with. If a body or skeletal remains are found, our state archaeologist and the state police come in. And if it's a crime scene, we leave. If it's an historic one, then we stay there and help deal with that. Historic buildings, buildings are meant to be used. So the objective of any historic building is to use it, not just have it sit and look gorgeous.
That's been a dispute in a lot of communities, isn't it?
Absolutely. But you need to have somebody to do that. You need to have somebody put money into it. And it's actually interesting in like Newcastle. One of the real attributes that this division does is our tax credits. The developer who developed the old mill in Newcastle made use of multiple dollars in tax credits that he says helped him actually make that thing work. And Peter Michaud over at the Division of Historical Resources, the tax credit guy, Beth Muzzy is the director there, and there's millions of dollars in tax credits that we can give out if somebody goes through the process and helps keep the buildings in a way that's going to be useful. Now, these are private developers, not I can't do it or the state can't do it.
So what's the thinking there behind millions in tax credits for someone who's willing to go in and redevelop in an appropriate way a historic building?
Well, I think there are a couple of things, one of which is the greenest building is one you don't tear down. And the bottom.
Although some of these old buildings are pretty leaky.
Well, yeah, but as soon as you tear it down, you have to dispose of everything. So if they're old bricks, for example, you got to find some place to put them, and you usually dig up a landfill and do that. So that's a whole issue of tearing them down. Now there are some buildings that are not savable. You cannot save. But how do you really look at it? And I think the trick in this is, from I think a developer's point of view, is get in touch with us early so we can help you with the options you actually have as opposed to the options you think you have, and then go from there.
Because if you come in with certain expectations and some of those can't be met, then it's a problem.
Exactly.
The Americans with Disabilities Act has opened up buildings for people with disabilities in tremendous ways that we couldn't have imagined, even 15, 20 years ago. But in some towns, as you know, Commissioner McLeod, there have been disputes over historic preservation of buildings versus making them accessible for people with disabilities. How do you see these two goals working together, making buildings accessible but preserving the historic buildings here in New Hampshire that are so important to us culturally?
Well, you know, therein lies a conundrum, I guess, because I think it is important to preserve historic buildings that are appropriate. If it's on the National Registry or the State Registry, they've been already qualified as something. I also think very strongly that, you know, the ability to make it accessible to all of our citizens is really important. When that whole bill first was created, I remember some of the issues in the old theater I used to run. And the issue to me wasn't necessarily just people, adults who were in wheelchairs. It was mothers with strollers. How do you develop a bigger audience? How do you include more people in the conversation to see the activity, to participate in the events? It's never – I don't have any solution other than let's work at it and work at it hard together.
Well, and in an aging state, you know, people are going to have walkers and wheelchairs and mobility issues and so forth, and you don't want to close down the theaters and the museums to
them. Well, as I get older, I truly believe that.
Commissioner McLeod, it's been really fun to talk to you. Thank you so much for coming in.
All my pleasure. Thank you.
That's Van McLeod. Again, he's Commissioner of New Hampshire's Department of Cultural Resources, first appointed by Judd Gregg in 1992. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colkin. Our producers are Ellen Grimm and Faith Meixel. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and tomorrow in The Exchange, 150 years of the New Hampshire Union Leader. Started as the Manchester Daily Union, it grew to be the state's largest newspaper, and over the past century and a half has also had its challenges, criticized by some for its conservative slant, and recently facing the financial struggles of many mid-sized papers. We'll look at the legacy of the Union Leader. Send us your thoughts by email, Facebook, and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
NHPR 959 and the Diane Rehm Show coming up next. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from the law firm Divine Milliman, presenting hot topics in employment law, addressing new and ongoing challenges faced by employers October 23rd in Bedford. Registration at divinemilliman.com. And Mark Knipe Goldsmiths at 2 Capitol Plaza in Concord, where every jewelry restoration and pearl restringing is conducted with the care each deserves at knipegold.com.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO Concord, 89.1.
WEVS Nashua, 88.3.
WEVH Hanover, 91.3.
WEVN Keene, 90.7.
WEVC Gorham, 107.1.
WEVJ Jackson, 99.5.
WEVF Colebrook, 90.3.
And WEVQ Littleton, 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
It's 10 o'clock.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Diane Rehm. The federal government remains partially shut down, but the U.S. Supreme Court's 9 justices are back at work. Today is the first day of their new term. They've agreed to hear more than 50 cases. Some of them address issues that have placed social